You're listening to Sportsnet Today with Logan Gordon on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
We're kicking off hour two on a Tuesday. Getting set for night four of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Took a look back at Monday's action in hour one, as well as hearing from head coach Rick Tocchet of the Vancouver Canucks and Elliot Friedman on the Thatcher Demko injury and the hiring of Lindy Ruff in Buffalo. If you missed any of that, check us out on the Hour One podcast, Google, Amazon, Spotify, or your favorite podcatcher. We're live in the Doug Lacy's Basement Systems downtown studios. They're your local experts for basement waterproofing, sump pumps, crawl spaces, foundation repair, and radon mitigation. They're all things basement-y. Visit dlbasementsystemscalgary.com. Kicking off hour two with more on the Leafs and the Bruins. The series tied at one as they head back to Toronto after a big win from the Leafs on Monday night with our pal Ailish Farfar, host of the Fan Pregame Show on Sportsnet. He's pregame on Sportsnet 590 in Toronto. What's up, Ailish? How are you?
Oh, I just got off the course. Leafs won last night. Strolling into work with my worst golf game of the season. So, you know, up and down. It's all good.
I saw you had a little bit of wind out on the course today.
Yo, that was insane. For folks, you know, I can't be complaining because I'm sure it's probably snowing in Calgary. But I have never golfed in conditions such as today's. It was like being on top of, I don't know, a mountain, Mount Everest, because I had my ball on the tee blow off multiple times before I could even drive it. So I'm like, what are the rules here? Can I get like a stroke taken off every once in a while because of the situation? But we're all good. I'm back indoors, ready to get stuff going for tonight. But, you know, I can't complain, I guess, about golfing midday.
No, and hey, the good news here in Calgary, we're at like 16 and it feels like spring.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, spring might actually be going here in Calgary. We've got some golf courses open, so we're
we just don't have playoff hockey,
that's all.
Well, you know, you can only have so many positive things. You can't be spoiled, you know?
Yeah. Let's start with last night. Big win for the Leafs. Was that the best playoff game Austin Matthews has ever played?
I mean, that was the best goal for sure that Austin Matthews has scored in the playoffs. That was rock star stuff. Like, that was, I'm going to win this game. First of all, incredible. That was Patrick Mahomes. You know, that pass, that touchdown, it was absolutely incredible to watch. And that's what the Maple Leafs are going to need this series. I'm sure we'll get into William Nylander and the lack of him and, I guess, Mitch Marner kind of, they're both missing, really. all of that to be said, I'm kind of up in a bit a mix in terms of, was it the best playoff game of Austin Matthews' career? Yes, I think it was statistically. I mean, I guess the two assists and the goal. But I still think there's more, which is the good thing. I think we're waking up on a bit of a hungry for more attitude this morning. Last night needed to be a win. You know, obviously winning at TD Garden is huge in its own. You're coming back with the split. But that the ability that Austin Matthews shows to turn the game on a dime is exactly what the Maple Leafs will need this series. Because they're a little shorthanded and the Bruins have the ghosts of the past. But I mean, I hope there's more than that, right? It was still a 3-2 game. You were still pretty lucky in some situations. You definitely need to figure out special teams and get more consistent. Whether the Bruins go back and forth with goaltenders moving forward, or that was your one opportunity to kind of capitalize on that, that's where the stars aligned. The Leafs had to win that one. And when you have someone like Austin Matthews, who's one of the greatest goal scorers on planet Earth, he has to do things like that. So expected, still appreciated. And I guess we're waking up being like, yeah, let's see that again on Wednesday.
You mentioned the two biggest support factors for Austin Matthews, and they've both been kind of MIA. Let's start with Nylander, because this one kind of popped up. I've heard Friedman mention maybe it was a game 82 thing, and he's been out there practicing, but he hasn't been ready for games yet. How much are the Leafs missing William Nylander in your mind 2 games into this series?
Oh, big time. Very, very strange. And I will say that the whole lack of understanding and the discourse around it has been pretty distracting. I can only imagine what that's like as a player too. I get it. Like, playoffs are a different world. If they come out and say, oh, you know, Willie tweaked his wrist, you know that Marshawn and XYZ are all going after Willie's wrist. So you have to be a little bit secretive about it. But it's kind of blown up, right? And of course we do that in Toronto. We want to know everything about everything. But I think, you know, fans want to know too, is this guy out all season? Is he out for the whole series? Does he need surgery? Should I buy, you know, $500 to $600 tickets on Wednesday and Saturday? I want to see him. Oh, is he playing? Is he not? Like, what's our projections for William Nylander? So I get the frustration around it. I'm obviously like eager to learn more, but I do understand the, you know, like, I guess the sensitivity around it. Nonetheless, missing William Nylander, almost 100-point William Nylander, is a real big loss for the Maple Leafs. The thing that was working for them down the stretch was having those three spread out balanced lines where you had Willie on a different line, you had Marner and Tavares on different lines, and you had obviously Matthews leading that top line. And it just let this well-balanced approach of like everyone over the boards can be a threat. Even the fourth line looked great last night. But when you don't have Willie, it's missing a big punch. It's missing a goal scorer ability. And you've kind of seen that already. And it's only been two games, but of course, having somebody that important to your lineup is a big loss for the Leafs. We have no idea what's going on. I've heard speculation this, speculation that. We're all playing online doctors, which is so silly, but it's kind of fun too. I mean, I'm getting some hilarious messages about, well, I bet Willie did this. I'm like, I don't know. Okay, whatever. Just get him on the ice. So it's been an interesting, I guess, side story. I have no idea when or if we should expect him back, but that's where Matthews has got to shoulder a lot more. And, you know, this leads to the whole Mitch Marner of it all, who needs to definitely show up come Wednesday.
Yeah, what's been the conversation about Marner? I saw a bunch of examples of some not so great shifts from him, or is a little soft on pucks in the offensive zone. And I don't know. Is the narrative around Mitch Marner that it just this time of the year doesn't adapt well to his game? Are we just expecting more from him at this time? Like, what are you guys talking about Mitch Marner mostly after two games?
You know, it's what we've been talking about after Mitch Marner every playoff series, and it's tough. And I don't want to be the type of person that piles on. And I think there's like an apologetic sense to a lot of people that talk about Mitch Marner because they're like, oh, I don't want to be rude, but it's like, I can be factual. He needs to play better. He needs to show up. He needs to be an $11 million player who wants to sign an even bigger extension this offseason. Like, the opportunity is right in your hands. This fan base wants gritty players. They want players that play with heart, and they want players that aren't afraid to go in the corner and win a puck battle. And he doesn't do that. So what does he need to do? Score goals, contribute offensively, and play like he means it. And that's what I think Leafs fans are missing the most, is the passion that ignites us all. That saying, we laugh about it, but that's why people love Max Domi right now. That's why they love Tyler Bertuzzi, and why Wendell Clark and Darcy Tucker and Ty Domi were beloved in this city. And Mitch Marner plays in a way that a lot of people don't love, but you know what they will love? When he contributes on the score sheet. So I think that's really important. I don't know if he shies away from the moment. I don't know if the moment's too big, but the moment is right there for you to take it for the rest of this series, especially if William Nylander's not there, because, you know, rumors are that Mitch Marner is going to want more money than William Nylander signed. And there's simply not enough room for all these guys to sign these dollars. And specifically if you don't perform in the playoffs. So he's got an opportunity here. If Willie's out and it's your chance to prove that you deserve that much money, then this is when you make it. So I think that's the frustration. Tavares got a nice goal last night, which was big, but you need like consistent pressure, passion, ferociousness from these guys, and it has to be elevated in the playoffs. And I think that's what Leaf fans miss the most when it comes to the Marner playoff discussion. But it's been two games, and the crazy thing is the Leafs are tied 1-1 in the series. Marner has been non-existent. And Matthews was good in the first game, great in the second game, and you still walk away with a tie after two games, and you split at TD Garden. So the opportunity for them to win the series is right in their hands, and they haven't played their best hockey yet.
Is this the kind of impact you think Brad Treliving was hoping for with Domi and Bertuzzi, this kind of series where these guys can try? And I know I'll ask you about the penalties and that stuff in a little bit, but for the most part, you mentioned it. you know, that passion and that fight, that kind of, I guess, snarl even, you know, that they've brought to this series. Mm-hmm. Is that kind of what you think Brad Treliving was hoping for when he signed both these guys in the offseason?
Big time, and still lots of room for that to grow. But when, I don't know if you saw Max Domi's playoff preview Instagram post. And
I did, yeah.
You know, there's a lot of, it was sick. I wanted to run through a wall. Like, it's awesome. This guy has the script. Like, he could do something so incredible for this fan base. His dad, obviously, as I said, like a super beloved guy in the city. They show him on the Jumbotron and people go nuts. And Max has that chance. Like, he has more skill than Ty. He has more ability to play with somebody like Austin freaking Matthews. Like, Ty wasn't getting that chance. So
no.
Everything that Max has at his hands is something that he can capture and write his own story. It's probably really hard to be your dad is superstar famous in the city and you're the new guy and you're playing for a contract. But it seems like he doesn't shy away from it. That pass he made last night, the way that he's kind of like not allergic to the noise, like he's embracing it. That's exactly what you need to do if you're a Max Domi. Tyler Bertuzzi, same thing. I saw him getting under the skin of some of the Boston Bruins. Like, I think this playoff matchup, Leafs and Bruins, leans really heavily into the favor of some of these guys like Domi and Bertuzzi to prove why they were given a one-year contract for the Maple Leafs. I don't know if we would have seen it if they had played the Tampa Bay Lightning. We probably would have seen it a little bit if they played the Florida Panthers. But this Leafs-Bruins rivalry means a lot to Max, of course. It means a lot to Tyler, who was a Boston Bruin. So I think it's a really good chance to prove that Brad Treliving was right in acquiring them and that they want to play for something like an extension, like a long-term fit with the Maple Leafs. So, like, everything is, as I said, like, in their hands, and they just need to continue to be consistent. But I've really liked that addition. It felt like for so many years the Leafs didn't have any snarl or pushback, and they were just faking it. These guys don't really fake it, but they still have a lot to prove.
Our weekly chat with Ailis Forfar from Sportsnet 590 in Toronto, and, of course, the host of the Fan Pregame Show on Sportsnet, chatting all things Leafs, Bruins, that series tied at one game apiece as they head back to Toronto for game number 3. I got to admit, the Bruins' power play hasn't been great. If anything, it's been opportunistic at times in this series. I'm still a bit worried about some of the penalties Toronto's taken, because some of those guys are still, in my mind, getting pulled into the intensity of it all a few times, and they got to be careful, you know, when you play that game, because it only takes one really big opportunity, it feels like, to shift a series. And I'm curious if you guys have had that same sentiment after 2 games in Toronto, that's something the Leafs can still use to clean up.
Oh, yeah. The Bruins definitely hold the advantage in special teams in both categories, penalty kill, power play, and you cannot give them an inch, right? And they play – the thing I like about the Bruins is, as crazy as it sounds, is they're pretty disciplined. They don't give you a lot of odd man rushes. They don't give you a lot of opportunity. You have to earn your opportunities against the Bruins, whether that's net front, whether that's getting a power play or PK. Like, I'll say, some too many men penalties, that is Leaf stuff. So for the Bruins to take a couple too many men penalties, it was like, that's when you need to capitalize. And the Leafs got an opportunity to score some power play goals, and they had one called back, and they eventually get one. But this game, we've seen this far too many times where the Leafs have their power play or penalty kill doesn't show up, and they lose a series. So it needs to be tighter. You can't be doing, you know, little cross checks in the back in front of the net when the refs are right there. And I think some of it's soft. Like, I think there should be a higher standard in the playoffs. Obviously, if you're cross checking a guy in the teeth, it's a different story, but I forget who it was. I think it was the Leafs' first penalty there. Like, McCabe, you know, when I saw it live, I was like, ah, come on. And then you see it a couple 15 times. You're like, oh yeah, I guess he did cross check the guy, but there's a lot of shenanigans on both sides. Some speedos getting pulled out of the closets, and like, I get it. Any advantage you can get over your opponent, whether that's being a little chippy, whether you're doing the Brad Marchand and falling and flailing when it was the other ankle. I saw that one floating around online today, which was hilarious. Like, you hate him, but you respect it because he's shameless about it. Like,
oh, yeah, he is. No worry about it.
Whatever, right? You want to laugh it off? Watch. I'll win a Stanley Cup and I'll show you. So, yeah, the Leafs need to reel it in 10 to 15% more. And when they do get a chance, which isn't often, and the Bruins get a penalty or the Bruins get pulled into the muck, they have to capitalize. And I think that's something that is going to be really important, because game 3, 4, 5, like, it gets tighter and tighter and the margins are thinner. And when you get the one chance to go on the power play, it's got to matter. So the Leafs, their special teams need to get a lot better for sure.
How cool was it? You were in the building in Montreal to set another record. Everywhere you go, you're setting records, Ailish. You got to see a couple of your good friends at the Bell Center, and another cool crowd for a PWHL game. How cool was that?
Oh, it was amazing. It was just so awesome. So 21 plus for the PWHL Toronto versus Montreal game at the Bell Center. It was my first time at the Bell Center, and I've heard amazing things, obviously, about the Bell Center atmosphere. And this wasn't a Habs fan base, but it was a really incredible hockey fan base. And, like, I can't speak highly enough about that arena, the atmosphere, the fans that traveled from all over. You know, obviously I drove like 5 hours, but it wasn't even just like Toronto people from the States driving up. It was just awesome, awesome, awesome. The applause that Marie-Philippe Poulin got for the starting lineup, that actually made me emotional, because she is, you know, she's Captain Canada. She is from a smaller town in Quebec that isn't right in Montreal. So, you know, she didn't get to play so much of her hockey in Montreal. And then since then, they've been missing an opportunity to cheer on the best, the GOAT, at a big enough arena to hear that applause. And when you hear 21 plus thousand people screaming and applauding and cheering and praising and, like, appreciating Marie-Philippe Poulin, that one will stick with me forever. Right. And I got to chat with her after, and she was so overwhelmed. She had like 50 family members come to the game, and finally caught up with her. And she's just like, I honestly can't believe it. I'm like, you should believe it. You are like, you're MPP. But she's so humble that I think she gets caught off guard when people really like applaud her like that. Yeah. I mean, I would have bawled my eyes out. I was like crying watching. And so she's just, I think it was just a really nice reflective moment for her, for the women's game in general. And that rivalry between Toronto and Montreal is, you know, it's amazing. Montreal has yet to beat Toronto this time. That was another OT winner. And like, God, they're going to need these wins, because they could be matched up in the playoffs, and then my allegiances are tested too, and I'll just have to wear a split jersey. But awesome experience. I'm really excited to see how the playoffs go. We're getting close, only a couple more games until the first ever PWHL playoff matches. So really looking forward to that, mixing that in with NHL playoffs. It'll be busy.
It's funny you mentioned how humble she is, because I think I've told you this before. Last summer, we were at a golf tournament here in Calgary, a big one, the Shaw Charity Classic, and Marie was out with a couple of other NHL and hockey stars doing stuff for the charity aspect here, and we got a chance to, me and Pat got a chance to interview her, and we were both, like, so starstruck. We were like, they were like, yeah, but Marie's going to come by for, like, 10, 15 minutes. We're like, absolutely, like, we can't wait, and you were right, the exact same thing. She's so humble, she's such a regular person, and we're just like, you're hockey legend, like, you're hockey royalty in this country, and you're just like the most casual, humble person ever. And it's just like, you're when you say that, it's so cool that I can resonate with that, meeting her a couple of times. But you're like, how are you not just like, I'd be so egotistical if I were her, because I'm just, you're the greatest of all time. You just, every big game you score, you're like the hockey GOAT, and you're just so cool all the time. It's really cool to see such a humble superstar, and you're right. She deserves all of that applause and all of that praise that she got. That was so cool. Before I let you go, what's been the best series in your mind, aside from Leafs and Bruins so far early on?
Oh, my God. It's actually been amazing. I could give you 100 answers, but the Hurricanes last night, coming back from the dead to beat the Islanders. Like, I honestly thought this was going to be a cakewalk for the Hurricanes. So I'll give the Islanders a lot of credit. They had an opportunity to win both games, but the Hurricanes are like inevitable, right? It's within grasp, not even within grasp. And they find a way, and they get 4 goals in that third period to win 5-3. I really love the pushback of the Hurricanes. Of course, I had a Mark Stone anytime goal, a Mark Stone first goal scorer yesterday. Like I said, this is a lock. Oh, guess who's back? Back again, Mark Stone. And I, on our show, I said, guys, you know he's going to score. I put him for first goal scorer. He does it. There's been something about every single series that I've actually been on the edge of my seat. But I will say one thing I'm maybe the most proud of is all the Canadian teams that have hosted games have shown up. The Jets in their whiteout, the Canucks, last night with the Oilers. Like, it's really been proud for like a Canadian here and us as Canadians that love hockey to see the Canadian franchises getting a moment to show how hungry they are for the Stanley Cup. That's what's been the most exciting for me. And obviously the Leafs are going to get their opportunity on Wednesday. So hopefully they do us proud too, but you can just tell how much a cup to Canada would, honestly, I think we'd all be healed. It would unite us all as a country. So we need someone to win this damn thing. But it was really awesome to see because, you know, it's been a little while since we've had this many Stanley Cup opportunities in Canada. So I'll say all the fan bases have shown up. It's been a really, really great start. And there's lots more tonight. We're looking forward to it. Like, Jets looked awesome. I'm on the Jets for upsetting the Avalanche for sure.
We got a couple former Flames in Winnipeg. So I think that's where the Calgary allegiances lie too. So we're on the Monahan to Foley train here. Thanks, Ailish. Yeah. You're the best. Love the chats as always, pal. Have a great week. Enjoy the games in Toronto, hey?
I will. We're going to be at Saturday night, which is going to be awesome. So stay tuned for that.
Can't wait for it. Enjoy it, pal. Talk to you later.
Okay, bye.
See ya. Ailish Forfar joining us down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Former pro women's hockey player. Now doing stuff with Sportsnet. And yeah, just kills it every single week we have her on. Great stuff on the Leafs and the Bruins there with Ailish. We will take a break, come back on the other side. Bruins Predators chat. We're getting ready for this one, and it's going to be a lot of positive for Vancouver after game one, and a great celebration, a lot of fun, big comeback. Dakota Joshua was great. And then the Demko news dropped on Tuesday. Let's get a feel for how the Canucks are feeling against game two and against the Nashville Predators. The play-by-play voice of the Canucks, Brendan Batchelor, joins us next. You're on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Game two, Predators and Canucks goes from Vancouver. 8 o'clock puck drop here in Calgary. Canucks look to take a 2-0 series lead. But the news of the day out of Vancouver, the health of Thatcher Demko. Good news for the Canucks. They've been down this road before, but never good to lose your starting goaltender. Out for game two and questionable for the remainder of the series. Canucks will look to Casey DeSmith, the former Penguins netminder, in goal as they look for a 2-0 series lead against the Nashville Predators. And the man on the call in Vancouver on our sister station, Sportsnet 650, is the one and only Brendan Batchelor, who joins us down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline this afternoon. Thanks for the time, Batch. How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing really good, man. Talk to me about the vibes in Vancouver today with this sudden Thatcher Demko news. Because I imagine it was a level of pretty good excitement after a big game one win, and then all this news comes down.
Yeah, there was a lot of excitement in the city. The building was really loud, especially when they scored those two goals in 12 seconds in the third period to turn a 2-1 deficit into a 3-2 lead, and ultimately went on to get the empty netter and win 4-2, and people were excited in the city. There was lots of optimism, and there's a little bit of a different tone from the fan base from what I'm seeing on social media since the news broke this morning that Thatcher Demko will not play tonight. And really, beyond tonight's game, his status is completely up in the air. So the Canucks, I guess, will just have to assume that they'll have to carry on without him here, at least for the moment.
I guess if you want to look at the positive side, I mentioned it coming in, Batch, they had a stretch here through April and March without Thatcher Demko, who was dealing with a knee injury. So I guess you've got experience if you're the Vancouver Canucks going through this, but no doubt this is a big loss for the team, knowing how important Demko has been to them for the majority of the season, hey?
Yeah, and, you know, if you want to take positives out of it, and, you know, it's hard to when you lose a guy that could be nominated for the Vezina Trophy potentially to yet another injury that saw him miss 14 games down the stretch in the regular season. It is that Casey DeSmith got a chance to play and play a fair bit over the last few months, so it's not like it's a cold goaltender that hasn't played a lot going into this game. He's a guy that has played behind this defense, has played within this team's structure as recently as just a few weeks ago. So, you know, that isn't a concern. And then the other thing is there was so much positive emotion in the building after the win the other night. And, you know, Rick Tocchet even said he would have liked to have had his players practice yesterday, but opted not to hold a practice because he thought that, you know, they kind of needed to calm down from some of the emotions of game one and get away from it a little bit before coming back into game two. Well, now that you don't have Thatcher Demko, there's no risk of an emotional letdown, or there shouldn't be anyway, because now you know you've got Casey DeSmith behind you, and nothing against DeSmith, who is a competent NHL goaltender, but, you know, he's not Thatcher Demko, and he's not in the same realm of goaltender as Demko. So where you would have probably said that you have the goaltending edge in the series, and certainly you did in game one based on how UC Saros performed at the other end of the ice. Now at the very best case scenario, it's, you know, the goaltending cancels each other out, and probably more realistically, you would say that you now give the edge to the Predators in the crease. So, you know, hopefully the players in front of DeSmith are ready to go. They've been one of the best defensive teams in the league in the second half, regardless of who was in net, and they're going to need to be tonight against a Predators team that I imagine will have some desperation in their game to try and even this series.
Going back to game one, and you mentioned some of the momentum from that game, what went so well for the Canucks in that first game? Was it the resilience? Was it a star like JT Miller having a really strong start to the postseason? What was most encouraging coming off of that game one win in your eyes?
I think the most encouraging thing for me was that they gave up the first goal. They were down after two periods. They lost the special teams battle, and yet they still found a way to win the game. And it was their 5-on-5 play that carried them. And a guy like Dakota Joshua on their quote unquote third line with Elias Lindholm and Connor Garland came up big with obviously the game winning goal, and then added the empty netter too. So in a game where you have a lot of those things go against you, but you still find a way to win, that's something that Vancouver can gain confidence from, I think, because, you know, more often than not, they open the scoring in games. They scored the first goal more than 50 times this year, more than any other team in the league. They had the most wins this season in the regular season when scoring the first goal. So, you know, in a game where you don't score the first goal, you get behind, you know, you tie it and then you get behind again. You have to overcome a couple of different deficits, but you find a way to get it done. And it wasn't your power play that did it for you. It was your 5-on-5 play. I think that's something they can hang their hat on and say, okay, if we play the way we know we can, maybe things go better for us in game two. Maybe we get the first goal. Maybe our power play can click and make a difference for us in the game. And then, of course, the goaltending situation now, you hope Casey DeSmith can come in and play as well as he did in his only other career playoff appearance, which was the 4-overtime game, I believe it was, between the Penguins and the Rangers back in early May of 2022, where DeSmith made 48 saves on 51 shots and then got hurt in double overtime. And Louis Domingue had to come in, and, you know, we all remember the spicy pork and broccoli being the talking point that night. So if DeSmith puts up a good performance in this one this evening, the Canucks win, I'll have to ask him what he had for dinner afterwards.
Dakota Joshua seems like he's been a really feel-good story for this Canucks team, and obviously a big performance in game one. But if you've been following this Canucks team like you have, Batch, all season long, I don't know that you were surprised given how good he's been this season for the Canucks.
Yeah, he's a guy that probably would have been a 20-goal scorer if he hadn't had an injury that held him out for a little bit of the second half of the season. But he's a guy that ever since Rick Tocchet arrived has had a real level of trust with the head coach, where even down the stretch last year when they were out of the playoff picture and playing out the string, Joshua got a chance in the top six, and Tocchet elevated his minutes after Bruce Boudreau had been let go. And then coming into this season, it looked like that relationship might be on the rocks, for lack of a better term, because Tocchet called out Joshua for his conditioning or lack thereof during training camp. And there was one day in the preseason when Joshua was skating with the AHL group and not with the NHL group. And you sort of thought, what's happened to this player that was in the coach's good graces? But credit to Joshua that he turned things around very early. That line with him and Garland, and there's been a rotating cast of centermen there. It was Pugh Suter early on, then Teddy Bluger for a large chunk of the season, and now Elias Lindholm, since he's come back off of injury. They really drive play for the Canucks. They're a huge difference maker. We talk about all the time, how they create momentum or shift momentum for the Canucks by their ability to get in on the forecheck and create turnovers and create scoring chances. So Joshua, who's a pending unrestricted free agent, has done a good job in a contract year here of upping his dollar value. And that's not something Canuck fans want to hear, because I think he's due for a bigger payday than you might have expected for a guy that was relatively unheralded when they brought him in as a free agent. And it's going to be interesting to see beyond this playoff run what the future holds for Dakota Joshua, whether it's in Vancouver or elsewhere, if somebody throws a bag of money at him.
Yeah, playoff performers don't usually get paid in free agency, right, Patch?
No, that never happens.
Good time for a contract here in your Dakota Joshua. We'll see what he's got in store for game two. It's interesting getting set for this series. I chatted with Bick and Sat a couple times getting ready for this. And one of the things that I know you guys were talking about in Vancouver was the bubble and how different it was going to be for so many of these Canucks to get into a playoff atmosphere. And what an atmosphere it was. It looked incredible in Vancouver. So happy to have playoff hockey back in another Canadian city. And it sure felt like, listening to the guys post-game, Batch, that it was never going to be a worry about this team adapting to the atmosphere. Maybe going to Nashville will be a bit of a different experience, but it felt like this was a group that really fed off of the crowd in game one.
They absolutely did. And, you know, you hear guys like JT Miller, who has been on playoff runs, you know, in New York of all places and in Tampa Bay on very good teams, after the game talking about how this was nothing like he'd ever experienced. And Miller actually said that the atmosphere in game one was third on his list of all-time life moments behind his wedding and the birth of his children. So that kind of speaks to how ready Vancouver was for the return of playoff hockey. It had been 9 years since Rogers Arena had hosted a playoff game because of the 2020 bubble year. So fans were ready to go, and the players were able to feed off it. Even Ian Cole, who now tied an NHL record by playing a playoff game for his eighth team when he dressed in game one, spoke about how that atmosphere was something that, like, guys were emotional and had tears in their eyes and goosebumps while they were out there for warm-up before the game even began. So the crowd really helped Vancouver, especially, I think, in terms of that switch in momentum in the third period that I talked about, where they got the goal and then they got the other one 12 seconds later, and it felt like the roof was going to come off the building. So they'll need the crowd tonight with some of the things that have transpired here with DeSmith going in between the pipes and, as I said, a Nashville team that, you know, has some veteran savvy and isn't going to go down easily and be content with going down or going back to Nashville down 2-0 in this series. So I do expect a little bit more nervous energy in the building tonight, though, without Demko in the crease. I will say that.
We're talking with Brendan Batchelor, the voice of the Canucks on Sportsnet 650, getting set for the Canucks and the Predators game two from Vancouver tonight to cap off night four of Stanley Cup playoff action. And it was interesting that you mentioned that bounce back from Nashville. And I really like that quote that JT Miller had about not waiting for them to respond, and that the Canucks need to go out, and him especially, need to go out and be the aggressor. I got to guess, Brendan, that's been a big positive for Canucks fans to hear, because you never know what, you know, these series change so fast, and we always, you know, cling on to the 24 hours after a game. But you're right. The last time I believe the Canucks saw Ryan O'Reilly in a series back when, he did some pretty impressive things, and you can't assume what game one was is going to repeat in game two.
No, and I think especially looking at it from the perspective you mentioned O'Reilly, he played very well against them for the St. Louis Blues in the bubble, but that was also a Blues team that had just won the Stanley Cup the year before, and it was obviously a very different experience for them from the previous spring, you know, playing those summer games in the bubble in Edmonton. But O'Reilly, I thought, wasn't a huge factor in game one beyond the power play goal that he scored. Philip Forsberg was pretty quiet. Roman Josi was pretty quiet. Juuse Saros didn't have a great game. I don't think you can count on that happening too often in this series. And, you know, the Miller line in particular, I think, did a good job of setting the tone and establishing the way they wanted to play. And it was kind of a soft matchup for them against that O'Reilly line. It wasn't always JT Miller. It was actually the Lindholm line with Joshua and Garland that got a good share of those minutes too. And I think that speaks to the Canucks' depth, that they were comfortable, you know, not necessarily chasing one matchup all game against the top line of the Predators, but, you know those guys for Nashville are likely to have a bigger impact on the game tonight. So anything you can do from a Vancouver perspective to set the tone, to dictate the way you want to play, to score early, to keep the crowd in it, like these are all things that will be huge in deciding who wins game two tonight in Vancouver.
How did you like Tocchet's use of the Lotto line and when he went to them? You mentioned earlier in our chat, you know, the depth of this Canucks team, especially with Elias Lindholm. And when you can run out, you know, a Lindholm line, a Miller line, and a Pettersson line, it's hard to match that kind of depth for the Canucks. But at times, he did put together that Lotto line that's been so popular in Vancouver and at times has been a dominant group. What did you make of the usage for Rick Tocchet of that trio in game one, at least?
Yeah, well, a couple of things come to mind. First of all, it was mostly situational, and it was at a point where they were chasing the game and needed a goal. So, you know, we often see, like, the Oilers, for example. Draisaitl and McDavid will play a part a lot of the time, but when you're chasing a game and you need a goal, you want your best players on the ice. So I think that was part of the thinking there. Also, you know, we talked about the Lindholm line, how good they've been, the Miller line, how good they've been. You can't say the same for the Pettersson line. And Pettersson in particular has received a lot of criticism in Vancouver for his play down the stretch, but he also really hasn't had consistent line mates all year long. Andre Kuzmenko played there a fair bit before the trade to the Flames. Ilya Mikheyev has played there quite a lot. Nils Höglander has been up on that line for stretches. Sam Lafferty played on that line early in the season and was on that line for game number one, at least in terms of how you drew it out on the lineup card before the start of the game, because we know that things often change in game. So I think it was interesting to see Tocchet's willingness to go to that line situationally in a game state where he needed a goal. But it'll be interesting to see, because he actually specifically mentioned that he didn't think the Pettersson line was good enough in game one, in particular on the forecheck. And Pettersson himself said this morning that he needs to be more effective moving his feet to try and help create things. So as much as the Lindholm line and the Miller line have been good, that Pettersson line has left a little bit to be desired here. And if the Canucks are going to lean on their depth and their ability to roll all those guys down the middle, especially in a game that won't have Thatcher Demko in the crease and potentially for the rest of the series based on the way things progress, Elias Pettersson has to be a bigger factor than he was in game one and has to be a bigger factor than he was down the stretch in the regular season too.
Last one I'll get to, and I should bring this up for those interested, just on based on the Demko news we've got today, Batch. Do we have any indication of what kind of rope Casey DeSmith is going to have under Rick Tocchet? Like, is this a situation where, say, a poor performance in game two and maybe we see Artur Silvos go in game three? Like, is there a big gap between those two players in this situation for the Canucks?
Yeah, that's a hard one to answer, because DeSmith obviously took over the crease when Demko went out injured in the second half of the season. But he had some struggles, and they called Shelovs up from Abbotsford to be the backup, but he actually got into, I believe off the top of my head, it was four games, maybe five, and showed relatively well when he got in there. And he's a young goaltender, 23 years of age, doesn't have a ton of NHL experience. I believe he's still in single digits in terms of his career games played in the NHL. But Rick Tocchet sort of praised his composure going into the net and talked about the fact that he was obviously the goaltender for a pretty cool run for Latvia in the World Championships last year and picking up a medal in that tournament. And so he is a guy that they have trusted in games, and they put him into games before they had locked up the Pacific Division, before they had locked up home ice advantage. So there is an appetite or a willingness to a certain degree to put Artur Shelovs in the net. But I think it will be Casey DeSmith unless things go completely pear-shaped. And, you know, I guess we could talk after game two, depending on how Smith plays or DeSmith plays. And, you know, there is certainly an appetite in the fan base for the young guy and Shelovs to get a look. And, you know, when Shelovs played a few good games, there were conversations in this market, and we heard from listeners on our station and on social media and everything like that, saying that they would actually rather that Shelovs go in if Demko were to suffer a hypothetical injury in the playoffs. Well, now Demko has suffered that injury. It's going to be DeSmith tonight. He's got the bigger body of work at the NHL level. But if he falters, would they look at Artur Shelovs? I can't say that the answer to that question is no.
Batch, great stuff. Really appreciate you hopping on. I know it's a busy day on a game day, and you've had all the Demko news to sift through, so I really appreciate the time. Have yourself a great call tonight, man. Enjoy the atmosphere and enjoy the rest of this series, hey?
Sounds good. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Thanks very much. Brendan Batchelor joining us, the voice of the Vancouver Canucks on Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver. He'll be on the call tonight for game two of the Canucks and the Predators. No Thatcher Demko, as we've discussed in detail tonight, for the Vancouver Canucks. Questionable for the remainder of the series. Casey DeSmith, the former Penguins goaltender, with one game of Stanley Cup playoff experience to his name, gets the start for the Vancouver Canucks, and we'll see what the Predators have in store. They'll obviously be going to UC Saros. He's their number one guy, and unless an injury comes up, nothing changing for that scenario for the Nashville Predators. Still on the schedule tonight. That's one of four games. Caps, Rangers. Capitals need a big bounce back. They were pumped in game one by the Rangers, and will need a big performance to prove anybody wrong and not head back to Washington down 2-0 in that series. That kicks off coverage on Sportsnet at 5 o'clock. 5:30, it's game two. Lightning and Panthers on Sportsnet 360. Avalanche and the Jets go again. We'll see if it's another high-scoring affair in Winnipeg. It's a 7:30 puck drop, and of course we mentioned the Predators and the Vancouver Canucks. Shan, you've got pregame coverage for one of these matchups tonight. What are we getting set for on the radio tonight, pal?
The Vancouver Canucks and Nashville Predators. That's at 8 o'clock here on 960. Yeah, listen, well, we've talked about this a lot. There's certainly going to be a lot to talk about tonight as well. This is a very interesting matchup, and with the Canucks being where they are and haven't had a home playoff game in 9 years, I think there's a lot of people that are interested in this matchup.
It's going to be a big one, and we'll react to all of it on Wednesday's show and get you set for night 5 in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Make sure you're tuned into that. Thank you to Brendan Batchelor for joining us. Thank you to Ailish Forfar. If you missed any of it, that's on the Hour 2 podcast. Coming up, we will have some AHL hockey on your radios this week. We'll chat with Sandra Priscina, the voice of the Calgary Wranglers, on Wednesday's show. The Wranglers getting set for game one of their series against Tucson. Playoff hockey on your radios here in Calgary Wednesday and Friday. Wranglers and the Tucson Roadrunners. Make sure you're tuned into that one. And of course, Sunday will be a game three, if necessary. First round of the AHL playoffs are all best of threes at the higher seed. So the Wranglers on the road for all three of those games. They are 8 o'clock puck drops right here on Sportsnet 960. The Fan. We'll check in with Sandra on Wednesday's show to get you set for that matchup. Thanks to Shan Vergie. Thanks to Cam Hughes and Greg for all their great work on this Tuesday. Again, missed anything on the program, check us out on the podcast. We also had Elliot Friedman on the Lindy Ruff situation in Buffalo, immediate reaction to the Thatcher Demko injury, and more. Enjoy the rest of your afternoon. Kipper and Bourne coming up. Flames talk with Steinberg and Vickers to get you set for the evening. Shan will be back later on with playoff pregame here on Sportsnet 960. And then tonight, the Predators and the Vancouver Canucks. Have yourselves a great Wednesday. This has been another edition of Sportsnet Today.